proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. This is your host, Aaron Broughton, and I want to welcome you to today's program. Often, we read the Bible from Gentile eyes and forget that the Bible is a Jewish book. When we take time to understand the Jewish context of Scripture, we find hidden gems that we often overlook. One such gem takes place in the upper room where Jesus celebrated the Passover with his disciples. On our last program, we discussed the ancient Jewish wedding customs that were present in the times of Jesus while he was here on earth. Now here's a quick review of what would have happened. More often than not, a marriage would be arranged by either a matchmaker or between two families themselves. A ketubah or marriage contract was agreed upon, which stated the bride price, what we would call today the dowry. After this, the young man would propose to the young lady by pouring a cup of wine or grape juice and place it in front of her. If she drank it, she said yes. If she put it aside, she said no, but she better think hard upon it because who knew when the next marriage proposal would come. Now, after drinking it, the young man would head out the door and say these words, "I go to prepare a place for you." This he would do for about a year, as he would build a little mansion, so to speak, adjacent to his father's house. The young lady would be preparing herself for her husband with a veil to cover her face, and then she would have a lamp trimmed by her bedside in case he came in the middle of the night. The day finally would come when the bridegroom would come for his bride. By the way, only the father knew when the wedding was to take place. He knew the day or the hour. The bridegroom would come with his best man with a shout, saying, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go out to meet him." This would be accompanied by the blast of the shofar or the ram's horn. He would then stop halfway between his house and the bride's house. His best man would bring her to him, and they would go then into the honeymoon chamber and consummate the marriage. A 7-day marriage feast would then ensue, as the couple would then live happily ever after. Now this was the background that Jesus used in this passage in John chapter 14. When Jesus celebrated the Passover with his disciples, he put the cup before them and said, "Drink ye all of it." In essence, Jesus had just proposed to his disciples. I'm sure they were surprised at first, but they learned that if someone follows Jesus, it means that they must accept him as the way, the truth, and the life. There are, of course, many parallels from this analogy as we look at Bible prophecy. It is important to know that Jesus has presented us with a ketubah, a marriage covenant. During the Last Supper, Jesus presented this cup when he said, "For this is my blood of the New Testament, or New Covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins." The price that was paid for us was the highest price of all, the body and blood of Jesus the Messiah. The promise of the return of the bridegroom Jesus should comfort our hearts to serve and wait for him faithfully. According to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 to 18, one glorious day, Jesus will come in the clouds for his own at what we call the rapture. He will come with a shout, with the trump of God. The bride of Christ will then be taken away into the wedding chamber he has prepared for us. There is an emphasis here on intimacy, as Jesus promised, "Where I am, there ye may be also." And folks, that should just give us just a glorious thought of Christ's love for us. Now, after the rapture of the church, the believers will be with Christ in heaven during the 7-year tribulation period. And at the end of the tribulation, Jesus will return to earth with his bride, as she is revealed to the world as his own. In other words, she's kind of like the mystery bride. That's exactly what the church is. It's a mystery. Now, this beautiful illustration of God's love is just one of the gems that we find in studying the Jewish background of the Scriptures. As the disciples carried the Messiah's message, they would remember Jesus' promise of his soon return for his own. Just as Jesus offered the cup to his disciples, he also offers it to you. Have you accepted the cup of salvation that Jesus freely offers to everyone? If you have done this, my friend, the future will be lived happily ever after. Let's now turn our attention to Jewish believer Brother Mark Oshman with today's Bible lesson.
Thank you for listening to these radio Bible studies. We will continue our examination of the book of Revelation by looking at the events that occurred in the 18th chapter. The narrative had changed from God's wrath on Babylon as a religious system to the ruin of Babylon as a mercantile power. Chapter 18 of Revelation, though, began with this statement, quote, "And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory," unquote. In one sense, the above description could apply to any member of the heavenly host. According to 2 Peter chapter 2, angels possess greater power than humans do. Moreover, whenever an angel appeared, that appearance evoked fright in anyone who saw that angel. This particular entity, though, might have simply reflected God's power and glory. At the birth of Jesus Christ, recorded in the second chapter of Luke, the shepherds beheld that, quote, "the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them," unquote. The narrative went on to note that they were very frightened. The angel in Revelation chapter 18 continued by saying, quote, "Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird," unquote. God, who has described himself as a jealous God will not tolerate the worship of false deities. Latter-day Babylon had become the residence of demons and evil spirits, just as her predecessor had become. Birds in the Bible sometimes represented evil entities. In Jeremiah chapter 12, for instance, God declared that, quote, "Mine heritage is unto me as a speckled bird," unquote. In Jesus Christ's parallel about the mustard seed, found in Matthew chapter 13, the birds of the air that he mentioned might have represented demonic spirits. God exhorted his people to come out of Babylon and to refuse partaking of her sins, or they would partake of her judgments. Paul echoed this cry in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. He issued this admonition to the Corinthian Christians, quote, "Wherefore come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty," unquote. According to Jeremiah chapter 50, God had wanted the Jews of that day to, quote, "remove out of the midst of Babylon, and go forth out of the land of the Chaldeans," unquote. In Zechariah chapter 2, God issued a later warning, quote, "Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon," unquote. God's children cannot continue to dwell in the midst of the devil's darkness. God will judge the end times Babylon for her spiritual infidelity, that is, her fornication. He will replace her pride and boasting with torment and sorrow. In Revelation chapter 18, the angel continued to speak about Babylon, quote, "Her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities," unquote. He called upon God to, quote, "reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works, in the cup which she hath filled to her double," unquote. The phrase, "her sins reached unto heaven," that phrase denoted the enormous extent to which Babylon had caused offense to God. The fourth chapter of Daniel's book included a similar phrase, in connection with a tree that symbolically depicted King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon's lofty status. A holy God and a righteous God must and will judge sin. The expression, "God hath remembered her iniquities," that expression did not imply that God had previously ignored or overlooked Babylon's wickedness. When God remembered his covenant with Israel in Exodus chapter 2, for example, he instituted a remedy for their complaint. In similar fashion, he decided that the time had come to punish Babylon for her sins. He had tolerated the existence of that religious apostate system for a period of time, just as he had allowed Israel to remain enslaved in Egypt for hundreds of years. When God remembered Israel, as he remembered Babylon, the use of that term indicated that God had chosen that moment to undertake action. At this point in Revelation chapter 18, the angel rehearsed the sins of Babylon, quote, "how much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow," unquote. The latter-day Babylon had developed a sense of pride, a sin especially hated by God. In Proverbs chapter 6, Solomon listed pride as one of the characteristics that God regarded as abominations unto him. God determined to humiliate all those who sought to exalt themselves apart from him. He challenged Job in the 40th chapter of that book to, quote, "Deck thyself now with majesty and excellency, and array thyself with glory and beauty. Cast abroad the rage of thy wrath, and behold everyone that is proud and abase him. Look on everyone that is proud and bring him low, and tread down the wicked in their place," unquote. The end times Babylon had placed too much confidence in her security. To vindicate God's people, he would bring down her downfall. As James remarked in the 4th chapter of his epistle, quote, "God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble," unquote. Those rulers in Revelation who allied with Babylon mourned over her downfall. When God will cast down Babylon, that action will negatively impact the economic arrangements that people have made under the rule of the Antichrist. The merchants who did business with Babylon stood far away from her, bemoaning their loss of commerce. The destruction of Babylon will affect some necessities, such as wine, oil, fine flour, and wheat. Yet most of the items mentioned in that list in Revelation 18 constituted luxuries that rich people, for the most part, would engage in. The list of Babylon's commodities contained the mention of slaves and the souls of men. This inclusion indicates the existence of certain elements in that society which regarded involuntary servitude or slavery as a means for buying and selling slaves. Even in our time, such slavery continues to exist in certain parts of the globe. In Revelation chapter 18, Babylon's sorrowful mourners noted that, quote, "In one hour, so great riches has come to naught," unquote. Just as God did with the Tower of Babel, an incident recorded in Genesis chapter 11, God will instantly destroy a system that took years for men to construct. Indeed, throughout history, God did that to entire societies, such as the original Babylonian Empire. Those who bewailed the fall of Babylon will say, quote, "What city is like unto this great city?" unquote. As Job pointed out in the 9th chapter of his book, quote, "Behold, he taketh away. Who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, What doest thou?" unquote. This passage, of course, referred to God and his capabilities. John beheld a mighty angel cast down a great stone and exclaimed, quote, "Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall be found no more at all," unquote. Such an action indicated that God would hear no appeal of his judgment against Babylon. No musicians would ply their arts there. No craftsmen would build anything there. Lights would no longer illuminate the streets there. No more weddings would take place there. God will condemn Babylon for two reasons. First, Babylon misled the world by working in cooperation with an apostate religious system. Furthermore, Babylon's spiritual power led people astray. John then beheld a mighty angel cast a stone into the sea, signifying the violence with which God will cast down Babylon. Babylon will suffer her just deserts. As God put it, quote, "In her was found the blood of prophets and of saints, and of all that was slain upon the earth," unquote. The rulers of historical Babylon, such as Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, the rulers of historical Babylon might have thought that they and their cities could remain untouched by the judgments of God. Needless to say, they were mistaken. Likewise, latter-day Babylon will learn that no amount of prestige can divert the hand of an angry God. God will deal as thoroughly with the combined religious and commercial apostate enterprises as he did with their earthly predecessors. We've now come to the end of another broadcast. Thank you for listening. We invite you to return for future radio programs about the Book of Revelation.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.